Welcome to Dog Talk and Kitties Too. I'm Tracy Hotchner. I'm here for everyone who loves dogs and cats, talking to experts and authors every week about the animals who share our world. Thanks for listening on Long Island's only NPR station, WLIW-FM 88.3, where Dog Talk originated 13 years ago. Listen to podcasts of the 700 previous shows in the library at RadioPetLady.com, along with Cat Chat and my other Pet Talk podcasts. Dog Talk is a production of Pet Media, Inc., which is solely responsible for its content. This show is brought to you in part with the generous support of Woruva, a family-owned pet food company that makes a vast variety of high-protein recipes for cats and dogs in cans and pouches using human-grade ingredients, which are prepared in a facility that makes food for people. This show is also made possible by Dr. Elsie's Precious Cat, a privately-owned company founded and run by Dr. Elsie, a feline-only veterinarian in Colorado who personally engineered all of his specialized litters. Dr. Elsie's is also the founding sponsor of the Cat Film Festival, which is now streaming alongside the Dog Film Festival for free on Amazon Prime and Tubi TV. My guests today are Laura Clark. She's the VP at Meet Me, a quite extraordinary raw food company in Virginia that is many things more than that. Amy Sadler will be here, my wonderful trainer friend. We're going to talk about what is the problem with people when their dogs are attacking each other on and off leash. How can we be more civil to each other? One of the topics we've been talking about the last couple of weeks. And Carrie D'Amato will be here. She's the executive director of Pet Haven in Minneapolis, a foster-based rescue. And we're going to talk about the silver lining of the pandemic for them in their ideas about cat rescue. But first, I'm delighted to have Laura Clark join me. I'm so fascinated by this company that I'm proud and honored to say has become a sponsor of this show. But I've been following this company for a really long time. It is absolutely, it is like a leader, I guess you could say, in the whole idea of how to make humane food. And that's an idea that most of us don't really understand. So, Laura, thank you for taking the time to be here and have a kind of philosophical conversation about this amazing company that you basically came out of retirement because you thought it was an honor and a privilege to lead this company into its next phase. Is that a good characterization?
That is a good characterization. And let me just say, first of all, thank you so much for this opportunity. I'm thrilled to be talking with you today.
The woman who owns and started Meet Me was on my show a number of years ago in another extraordinary role, which was as the author of one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen called Catacons. And it turned out, I didn't realize it till after the interview, that all of these extraordinary objects, paintings, tchotchkes of museum quality that were all about cats were from her own personal collection, but that her passion at the time, her new passion after having been a collector of everything cat, was to have a farm where the animals lived and died humanely. At that time, it was a human food company, Ayrshire Farm in Virginia. At what point did it morph into becoming a pet food company, which is when you came in from the pet food world? You'd been in the industry and you had retired. You'd had quite a long run. So when did it turn into a pet food company to make this really very beautiful raw meat for dogs and cats?
Well, so you hear people talk about overnight successes that take 15 years. Well, in this case, the founder of the company had long been making pet food alongside human food, but it was a very small endeavor at the time that was more regional and locally focused. And as time went on and organics took hold and more companies offered them, it was less important to have to raise awareness for organic farming because she had been successful. She was a pioneer and the message was out there. So she started to focus a little bit more on pet food. We still do make human food and we have a restaurant under the parent company and we sell our food to people in the restaurant. It's delicious. And then we have some other human food customers. But for the moment, the main focus of the company has shifted to being pet food production. And we're just kind of scaling what we already were doing for years and doing well. We're just making it better and better. The science has changed since we started back in 2003. And we're just making it even better every day, which is extremely exciting. And even more exciting, we're able to bring it to more people because we're focused on growing it.
How can focus on growing meat, which is a very interesting idea because most of us don't think of that. We think, oh, organic farming, we get it. You know, broccoli rabe and arugula is sort of what we think, or even just regular broccoli. But when you say making it better, I mean, if you're talking about obviously very human grade food, it's served in a restaurant and sold to other restaurants, that exact same meat is now in the form of raw pet food for pets. Making it better, you mean right. Better technology to produce it more rapidly or more safely or cleanly, or what makes it better? I mean, once it's such good quality to begin with.
Well, the challenge with pet food is creating something complete and balanced that has a nutritive punch
right.
That really is a powerhouse for the animals. And so we start with the foundation of meat, which would include meat and so muscle meat and organs and ground bone. But then we have to also make sure that all of the other notes are correct in the food so that there is a balance. And in theory, the animal could eat just our food for life and thrive. And that's not something that's real easy to do. So we've enlisted the help of a PhD DVM who has turned our meat base into recipes that appeal to animals, both as something that's good for them, but also that they want to eat. And even better, it's raw. So we feel like with every new iteration, we are looking at food science and figuring out how to do a better job of helping animals live better lives with higher quality of life.
Now, that also applies to the animals who become the food. And this becomes a kind of touchy, cringy, squeamish topic for some people who think nothing of sitting down in any restaurant or going to a grocery store and buying all kinds of meat, fish, chicken, whatever falls under the, you know, the headline of protein for themselves. But the idea of humane raising and then the even more fine-tuning of a humane death for animals who become our food or our pets' food, it's a tricky one for people. And my understanding is that the owner of the company wants that idea to enter our minds. She was one of the co-founders of Cisco, which I know what one doesn't have to talk about, but she's a very brilliant, highly successful woman in the technology sphere. And she's clearly just a very brilliant woman. My understanding is from what you said, and also from what I'd read about the company, and I really have been following it for a few years, I'm completely captivated by the idea that animals, all of their needs and feelings are taken into account before they become food, and then for the pets on the other end who are eating it. It's a very kind of global, inclusive idea. But I think that somehow it's pet food that's leading this idea, Laura, and that's so strange to me. We don't think at all. I've never heard anybody wonder or care that their meat had a humane life. Is it grass-fed? Maybe they look at that. Is it quote-unquote organic? Well, certainly they look at that if they care. But did it have a humane life? That's a very odd idea for most people. It's an important idea. Do you think that pet food is going to, or pet food, is going to lead people to stop and think and care and make decisions based on that?
We hope we can contribute to that. But I do think that you will find a lot more awareness around this in the human food industry too now. You know, the company that certifies our humane food also certifies a lot of humane food in the human food industry. So I think there is growing awareness, and it's taking hold pretty quickly. I like to think that we're part of a movement. And you mentioned that I came out of retirement. I've been a lifelong vegetarian, and I'm not judging anybody, of course.
Oh my gosh.
But since I was 11 years old, I've been a vegetarian, and now I'm heading up a company called Meat Me. And there's a reason for that, because In pet food, cats are obligate carnivores, obviously. They need to eat meat. Dogs thrive eating meat. And there are going to be options down the road. They're not here quite yet. They're on the horizon. But it will be a long, long time before, if ever, dogs and cats are not eating meat. And so I wanted to make sure to be part of the movement to help it be humanely raised and slaughtered meat. And our founder also founded Urban Decay Cosmetics, which was a pioneer in the cruelty-free cosmetics area.
Oh, I didn't realize that it was part of the idea of cruelty-free cosmetics was an idea not dissimilar to this, a teeny tiny idea that people were like, huh? I mean, it didn't resonate immediately for people, but then when it did, that you see that on so many products now.
Right, exactly. And people are starting to care in far greater numbers. Factory farming is an atrocity. And it's an atrocity for many reasons. It's horrific for the animals. It's horrific for the environment. And frankly, it's something that I believe, maybe I'm an optimist, but I believe that it's one of those things that in the not too distant future will be a hallmark of an archaic practice that is more in a different century. It seems like something that would never happen again. Like bloodletting seems to us at this point.
Or leeches.
Right, or leeches, or before we knew about germ theory. Yeah, this is something that I believe is going to go the way of an antiquated practice. And in its place, I hope that there will be a hearkening back to a kinder time when people appreciated the food animal. So before we had factory farming, people took care of their animals. They gave them good lives.
Right.
And then at one point, they decided that they were going to have to sacrifice that animal to feed their family. But they were very, by and large, a lot of them were very appreciative of and grateful.
Yes.
And I think we're going to go back there. I hope so. And I hope Meet Me can be part of that concept, because this is the real deal. This is not something that we hopped on the bandwagon because it was a gimmick that was taking a little bit of traction. You know, Furry Foodie was the first food that was introduced through this company. And at the time, I owned a regional chain of nutrition stores for pets. And we sold Furry Foodie because we believed in it. And so when I found out that it was going to evolve into something much bigger and be available on a much larger scale, there's no way I could turn down that opportunity. I wanted to be part of it. So it's extremely exciting, but this is something that is a true passion of all of ours who are working on this project. And I do believe that we are going to change the world a little bit, maybe just a tiny part of it. But if you have a lot of companies changing things a tiny part, then eventually you see the needle move in the right direction.
I mean, everything you've said is really interesting. I know I have a goddaughter who at 8 became a vegetarian. She's the big fat age of 20. So she hasn't done it as long as you have, but passionately. Like, you know, because she and her mother, when she was 9, got her a pig at a sanctuary that was going to be her pig. And it was a 5-hour drive from New York City, and she knew the pig. And recently I had to send her a pet grief handbook because the pig died after all these years.
Oh,
he was already old when he became her pig, and it really mattered to her. And it's really not to make joke of it or to make joke of Charlotte's Web and the fact that Babe, the movie, where all these kids are like, wait a minute, that's bacon. You know, it's a hard concept. And I'm listening to the audiobook of All Creatures Great and Small, because during the pandemic, you need something that's that soothing. And all of the farmers that he visits, Harriet, they do have the one pig or the 10 cows, and they're very caretaking of them, and they worry about their wellness, not just because they part of their livelihood, but because they are going to eat them later, and there is a respect to it. And there's, of course, cultures where they thank the animal before slaughtering it.
That's right.
Genuinely thank it. I'm more cynical than you, but I'd love to be that optimistic. And I think a chink of light is to think, well, gee, cruelty-free cosmetics, Urban Decay, that started an idea that's now really quite across the board, even to very commercial kinds of makeup, because they discovered that mattered to people. Same thing with cage-free eggs. it's easy to be cynical and say, well, the ones that are cage-free aren't exactly lurking about underneath a tree. They're still all kind of cramped together, but it's still better than being trapped on those bars that they were on. And then you find a McDonald's or various places that will only use cage-free eggs and Hellman's mayonnaise and whatever it may be. And it does become across the board, even affordable. And so I wonder about the affordability of raising animals with something that it could be called certified humane. They have a life that is pleasant and appropriate to their species. And the whole idea of a humane slaughterhouse is really rare. I just know because in Vermont, where over the years I've, you know, for these people that raise the heritage pigs and then they raise eight cows, and there was apparently there was not a humane slaughterhouse in Vermont, where you think Vermont's so, you know, crunchy granola. There was one. So this guy, his beef, by the way, was horrible. It was so dry and so tough. I think these animals were running relay races or something. But he took it to a slaughterhouse that he watched himself was humane. We all are just cringe at the idea of slaughterhouses. So do you think even the death of animals could be made? What you're saying, in fact, that's where the most horror is. Their lives really are awful too, but their deaths are vile. Do you think that a company like Meet Me can have this influence? You're seeing already seeing ripples of the circle?
I do think that we can, and I want to emphasize we're not alone here. There are other companies who are starting, most of which are very small, who are starting to get this more into the mainstream. And yeah, I agree with you. The whole concept is very fraught, extremely difficult to think about humane. A lot of people will say there's no such thing as humane killing. And I understand that. I abhor violence. I especially abhor violence to animals. I do know, however, as a realist, that this is going on in staggering numbers every day. And the vast majority of the animals who are giving their lives are not being treated with respect either during their lives or at the time of their death. So it's critical to me to be part of the solution. Do I hope one day that we will evolve to a point where we are not seeing this level of loss of life? Yes, of course I do, of course. And as I said, this is a very fraught issue, and I stand by and feel good about the fact that a little bit of positive change is the right direction. It's not, we're not going to, you know, build Rome in a day.
Right.
But if we can take a step forward into greater awareness, into people being a little bit more thoughtful and conscious of what's going on before dinner arrives on their plates or food arrives in their dog's or cat's bowl, then we've done some good. And listen, if I get through to a handful of people, then I've done my job. If I get through to hundreds of people, then I'm elated. If I get through to thousands of people, then I feel like I've made a real difference. And and that's my goal and my team's goal every day.
I think it's absolutely wonderful. And we've run out of time, but I feel seriously so delighted and privileged to be part of the Meet Me messaging out to the world that there is a better way for animals to live and die on behalf of our pets. And I hope we also learn that that would be true for ourselves as well. I just want to salute you as a vegetarian for your bravery in taking on this job. I understand philosophically exactly why it's appealing to you, but as you say, the name of the company is must be kind of jarring to you each day. But I salute you, and I salute everyone you work with for trying so hard to do something that needs to be done. And I hope lead the way and show the way to others. Thank you so much for being here, Laura.
Thank you, Tracy. Thanks for helping us get the word out. We appreciate it.
This show is supported in part by Meet Me, a farm in Virginia that makes raw frozen foods and dehydrated treats for cats and dogs using their own USDA certified organic, certified humane, and non-GMO meats, all humanely raised and processed right on their own property, which is why they say ethical eats for companion carnivores from farm to bowl. This show is also brought to you by Merrick Pet Food, which began 30 years ago as a family-run company in Texas, where they're still making natural pet food. Their kibble is made without preservatives, fillers, or anything artificial. Their recipes are made under strict FDA guidelines, using only USDA-certified meats and fish, which are always the first ingredients in all their grain-free and healthy grains kibble. I have invited my friend Amy Sadler back on the show. As you might have known over the years, I was her very first dog training customer, and she was the first dog trainer I'd had and as adult. And I guess I was an adult 30 years ago. It's hard to say, but I think it's actually been that long. She now runs Dogs Playing for Life, which is a most extraordinary organization, a film about the group and one of her sons, who's a handler in the group, was in the Dog Film Festival. They get dogs that are cooped up in shelters, particularly crowded county shelters, to come out and be in play groups together in play yards and get the staff to understand that it's okay if they make a little rumbling and grumbling. It's going to be all right. I thought the perfect person to come on the show in the ongoing conversation about my dog's in danger or my dog is a danger to others. Is it okay to be on a leash? Can you be off a leash? What do you do if a dog comes after you? I thought Amy would be the person to help figure that out. If I had that problem and I lived near her in Colorado, I would knock on her door and say, hi, can you work with me and my dog? But most of us don't have that privilege. So Amy, welcome back to the show. And thanks for taking time from your bigger picture of many, many cooped up dogs, many of whom are considered aggressive and turn out to just be cooped up dogs, to help us understand what's it like to have our own dog who's a nasty bastard on the leash, growls, lunges, or perfectly nice on the leash, and along comes another dog who is neutral. We don't know. Are they safe? Are they dangerous? Is this something that either friends or colleagues or clients, not that you have so many private clients anymore, do they come to you with this issue? What do I do? How do I handle this?
Well, yeah, I mean, thank you for having me back, as I always love yakking with you.
Indeed.
So it's fun. And we always pick good topics, so that makes it very mentally stimulating for
good.
Me as well. But
good.
And this is an awesome one. So I think what we're talking about is civility, right?
Dogs civil with each other, but it's up to us to make that work.
Yeah, but I think that, okay, so dogs by nature want to be civil with one another, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I think what happens in the process of how they have to live in our human constructed world and what goes awry for them in that process. And if our dogs are going to make bad decisions when left to their own devices, can we help them decide to make better decisions on their own devices? And or if they won't make better decisions, then what's our responsibility in managing them respectfully? Well for them, well for us, but also respectfully for those around us.
That's really well put. Dogs making good decisions. I think there's been a couple of movies over the past decade where a mother says to a middle grade school kid, make good decisions today. And you think, wow, that's that's intensely cool. Our parents never said that to us. They just said, you know, have a nice day or, you know, don't get beat up or something. But make good decisions. How do you know if you have a dog who's a bad decision maker, or is it only in certain circumstances where that dog just goes off into another headspace and isn't their best self?
Well, I mean, I think that's always the question. So as far as dogs making bad decisions, the problem that we run into is a lot of times dogs are making very logical decisions and behaving very appropriately for dogs. It's just not working out for us in the moment, right?
Right.
So like, I cannot remember who it was that did this. I was dying laughing. I was at attending some seminar of somebody else's. And she said, can you imagine if you were hanging out in your backyard with your children and as people walked by, you know, the fence line on the paseo or whatever, your children ran up and down the fence line trying to squirt them with their squirt bottle and shouting expletives every time somebody walked by.
Yeah.
What would we all do? You know, would we say, you know, come inside. I've got some ice cream. Come on in. No, don't come on in. Right. We wouldn't allow our children to behave in such a manner. And yet, right, we'll sit there on our porch and feel helpless when we watch our dog run up and down the fence line, threatening anybody that walks by. Right.
That's a good example, because, of course, it only gets worse over time. The more the dog practices that behavior, the more they express it.
Yeah. And what was so funny when I watched the speaker do this is she ran up and down the stage and, you know, flipping her fingers and saying the expletive words. So it was just hysterical watching her example. And I'm like, yeah, why would we ever do that? And So yes. So to the point for dogs, but is it, does it make sense for a dog to run up and down a fence line and be shouting at people walking by? Sure. It does make sense because their job is to be alerting. Like why did we end up hanging out with dogs in the first place? And of course they weren't dogs at that time. Right. How did this whole freaking thing start between us? Right. They were taking advantage of us, you know, being the scavengers that they chose to be. And then it worked out for humans because the, canines that were around them could be a good alert system for them. And then, you know, interestingly, relationships formed and then it became even more fun for different reasons. But there was a practical purpose of dogs and humans connecting, however, there, I don't know what the number of years are ago, millions,
right, thousands.
But anyway,
a lot.
It's normal for dogs to alert, hey, we're the pack here. There's somebody, something else is going on out there. And I need to tell you about that. And then I'll tell you about it. And then we should do something about it. And so then that's where we get the disconnect is when
right.
people, you know, sit there in the chairs and watch the dogs. So I'm like, well, if you're not going to do something about it, I guess I have to do something about it. Right.
Right.
And then on and on it goes from there. And then the bottom line is if your dog is behind your own fence line yelling and screaming, just because you can doesn't mean you should. What's the letter of law versus the spirit of the law? And to be a good neighbor, maybe you are entitled, technically. Your dog is on your property to run up and down yelling. You can't do it. You can't let them do that at certain hours of the night. But then maybe we'd like to help our dogs not display that to non-threatening strangers. Maybe that's in the dog's best interest anyway. But I think people don't get to that because they're just not sure how to do that and accomplish that. And it doesn't work, right? So that's when they try to you want to call a trainer in. And then depending on what training you're working with, how well that's going to go for you. And then sometimes for a lot of us, it's just, I just want to have my companion and my dog hanging out with me. That's too much work to have to train my dog not to do that. And
right.
so then people kind of just give up and then they say, oh, my dog's friendly. It's like, well, your dog don't look friendly right now.
Yeah. Or how about the fact that you think, oh, there's something wrong with that dog because my other dogs didn't do this. I didn't have dogs mm-hmm. before that did that. Or I had one dog. Now I have two. Now they're acting like mm-hmm. a pack. God forbid you have three. I mean, you worked with me when mm-hmm. I had three. Three is, mm-hmm. is you know, exponentially much. It's more than one, two plus one. So I mm-hmm. guess really what we're saying is, do you say to the dog, come inside and have an ice cream? Pretty much. I mean, that's what I do with my dogs when they alert and bark ferociously and go out the dog door to the UPS guy or the mail person.
Sure.
They now immediately come back inside and get rewarded because they sure. alerted. And I was like, yeah, that's enough of that. And they came back mm-hmm. in. If I simply mm-hmm. kept them in a position where they could never get out and never get rewarded for having done that job, they'd probably build up a lot of more emotion around that or frustration mm-hmm. or adrenaline
frustration,
or oxytocin
right.
or all that stuff. So if we mm-hmm. talk about dogs on leashes, if you, let's say you do have that yard barrier aggression dog or you don't, you're on a leash mm-hmm. and you're walking your dog on a leash. And let's say your dog is neutral on a leash, doesn't love mm-hmm. other dogs, doesn't go after other dogs, but maybe even would, you'd rather that other dogs don't approach. There's a weird mm-hmm. thing where, like you said, people say, my dog's friendly. I have a friend who walks her dog on a circle in her house. She lives in a planned community and there's a circle and she walks her dog's leash, one of whom is horrible to other dogs. And so a person mm-hmm. is walking there, an unknown person with a dog off a leash. And she said, would you please put your dog on a leash? Mm-hmm. Oh, no, my dog's friendly. No, I'm asking you to please put your dog
That's
on a leash.
Not the
my
point.
Dog's not friendly. But my dog's fine. So let's talk about just because you can, should you? I mean, never mind if there's a leash law. Someone is asking you to put their dog on a leash. It's happened to me because I am only leash mm-hmm. free, as you know, in huge spaces. Mm-hmm. But there can mm-hmm. be people who have a dog on a leash for whatever reason. They either don't have voice control, don't want to have voice control. They like having the dog on a leash and they're scared. So really, isn't the human mm-hmm. saying to you, I'm frightened?
Sure. Yeah. And I think that we need to respect that. But here's the thing you said with regards to leash laws, and I agree with you, like we're having a deeper conversation than that. Right. But let's say you have designated spaces. There are spaces. This is where people come to enjoy their off leash time with their dog. Right. And if there's a designated space for that, and that's the understanding, right? Dogs are allowed to be off leash here. That's
right.
what the space is for. Then I would say, to be honest with you, I think it's uncivil for the person that is frightened and with their dog that is not appropriate with other dogs that needs to be on leash, I don't think they should go to that space.
Agreed.
In my opinion, their civil responsibility is to go to the spaces that will be safe and are designated where everybody will be cooperative in that same standard.
What's interesting there, you know, not that long ago was people arguing over snow shoveling, and a couple shoveled their snow onto the other guy's space lawn. Guy came out and said, "You can't do that. Take it off." And a lot of words ensued, during which he went and got a gun and shot them both because they continued to yell and scream at him. This happened during the snowfall in early February. In I don't know what city it was in the news. And then he went inside and killed himself. So it's like, okay, territorial issues. I think that COVID has certainly made people very overwrought and wound up. And maybe they've forgotten how to be civil. But it's not that different. If someone is doing something that's uncivilized, you might say, or disrespectful, you know, I've had people yell at me, "Put those dogs on a leash. They're fine. I have control over them." And I do, which is kind of amazing. Mm-hmm. They will come to me from whatever. They'll even leave a wonderful carcass and come to me. I mean, I'm into a dead wild thing. But those people are really scared, and it makes me really grumpy. It used to happen in East Hampton in the woods. You used to walk with your dogs with me in the woods, and there would be people on a really very rustic Northwest woods path, and they'd have a small New York City fluffy dog on a leash and scream, "Put that dog on a leash." There were no leash laws. What were they doing? Go back on the sidewalk. And what did I do? I moved. I mean, swear to God, I moved to Vermont. I thought, I can't take this. I mean, not everyone has that freedom.
Ability, right.
But it does, it makes the person being told to put their dog on a leash really mad too. It's a complicated thing. You and I talked about this before we did the show, and you talked about a deck that you've just built. I mean, use that as an example of thinking of other people's feelings despite what a law might be. The music.
Yeah, well, that's exactly. It's the same point. I mean, hopefully we're going to be out there hanging out on the deck listening to music. I live in an HO community. I've got neighbors on all sides, and we've provided more privacy for ourselves with this deck and everything. But what about the noise? I love music. And so, yeah, I recognize that during, you know, the daytime, if we're out there all hanging out listening to music, that's great. But there's a time where you tone it down, because sure, I'm entitled in my own backyard to enjoy that space in a civil way. And there's a time where it's not fair for me to enjoy this space because it's impacting others. I mean, for me, I try to live my life. There's a primary driver. Do not benefit at the expense of others.
Nice.
Now, that's super hard to live by, you know, with complete integrity, because you can always find like, oh, when I buy this, it then impacts that.
Right,
and then
right,
you know,
right.
You could torture yourself. But in concept, I'm always trying to think that way.
Nice.
And I think none of us like to be told by someone else. You know, I'll hold myself to my own standards. But if my neighbor, another one of the neighbors, if it was, let's say, 8:30 at night and not like the 10 p.m. cutoff or whatever, and I had a neighbor that yelled over their balcony at me like, "Hey, I've got my kids sleeping. Can you guys tone it down out there?" Would I bow up and take offense to that? And might I at that point think, you know, you're going to have to deal with it till 10 p.m., you know?
Right.
Or do I think, bummer, maybe their baby's colicky today, whatever. You know, why don't I make a decision to be civil for my neighbor? And then maybe I can go around tomorrow and say, "Hey, sorry that was loud." Or you just see if I can find some compromise, maybe speak with them or whatever it might be. But should I in that moment bow up and say, "Well, I can, therefore I will." Well, yeah. I can, but maybe I shouldn't in the moment.
Right.
And I think that that's what we're talking about with the dog and everything. So
we are. I mean, I think that people have to coexist on the planet, whether they live in a wide open space or more of a closed in space, and understand that their dog does impact other people.
Others.
Even if you have the friendliest dog that doesn't even jump on people. Loves people, loves other dogs. Do you let that dog be loose in a place where he could go running up to a person who hates dogs, dislikes dogs, doesn't want to be near them, had a bad experience?
Right.
That's just wrong. You're invading their space, much less their dog's space. I think that...
And it's public space.
Yeah.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Right? If it's public space and it's not, and it's to be shared regardless, then we all have a responsibility in public space to have some level of civility and conscientiousness. And that doesn't mean, and that's why somebody that is taking their dog to an appropriate where people should be able to let them run, I think it's not fair for them to like you know, rain on the parade of the off-leashers, you know?
Right.
Go someplace else.
But by the same token, understand that the other person, when you shoveled your snow onto their lawn, might literally have a gun. I mean, this is the problem with a hair trigger society where everyone, many people, too many people have guns, and they're already on edge. Now they're on edge because of the economy, you know, all kinds of things, personal problems. Maybe there's have a substance abuse issue. You don't want to push it. You want to be civil, not just because it's the right way to be human, but you don't want to push somebody who could be on a hair trigger. I mean, there's just sort of practical reasons. So the story of Suzanne Craig walking her leash dog past a house where there's a loose dog, she knew there was a loose dog there. And she knew this dog had an attack button and it could get pushed. I don't know. I mean, she said herself, I should have done something the first time. I should have said something the first time. Change where you walk. I don't know. Call the people. Knock on their door without your dog and say, I like to walk at 11 and 4. Is there any chance you could keep that dog inside? I mean, how hard would that be? We could all do that. We could all make that effort. We all have language. And it can. And I think it's a way of being more civil is saying, can we share this space in a way where none of us are in jeopardy? You don't. Your dog doesn't have to be put to sleep. You don't get bitten. I'm not terrorized. Everyone doesn't have PTSD. Dog fights cause PTSD. They're horrible. So, you know, you've seen a few in your life because of the work that you do, but you don't like them either. So I don't think people should could carry a pepper spray or an air horn or whatever these other things are. You got to really protect yourself and your dog by thinking ahead and trying to be as civil as you can to other people with their needs. Amy, I think this conversation could go on a long time, but I think as we run out of time, that I hope that you've provoked thought in people about conscientiousness, live life in a way that's really civil, and think about the other guy. You know, walk a step or two in their shoes or in their dog's shoes and think, it's not a wicked, horrible dog, but he needs to be protected from a situation where he's going to make a bad decision. So thank you for being here. Thanks for all the work you do with dogs and rehabilitate them to be good citizens who make good decisions.
Well, thanks, Trace.
This show is also brought to you by Evermore Pet Food, which is privately owned by Hannah and Allison, two women who make freshly cooked dog food that ships directly to your home. They source organic vegetables and use only humanely raised meats, all of which would be safe for people to eat. Gently cooked, then frozen in sealed pouches, Evermore beef, turkey, or lamb dinners can be served as a complete balanced meal for your dog or as part of her diet. This show is also supported by Earth Animal, which is privately owned by Dr. Bob and Susan Goldstein, who have combined science and nature in creating many unique products for animal wellness. Dr. Bob has developed a full line of flea and tick products which use no harsh chemicals, and Earth Animal's Zen Pens deliver precisely dosed CBD gel made from full-spectrum hemp oil, which you can rub inside a dog or cat's ear to help with pain or anxiety. I am delighted to reconnect with Carrie D'Amato. She's the executive director of Pet Haven in Minneapolis. They've been our wonderful partner when the dog and cat film festivals have been in town, but as we all know, there is no such thing as a movie theater or a restaurant or any kind of a gathering anymore. And I am just, besides dying to know what Carrie, who is such a dynamo in the sheltering world, what she's doing, how she's using this time well, is to find out what it's like to have the doors closed when you've spent your whole life, Carrie, trying to get people to come in the door and adopt or foster. This is must have been an incredibly trying time for you. Welcome. Welcome back to the show and congratulations for hanging in there through this pretty miserable time for all of us.
Well, Tracy, thank you so much. Thanks for having me on the show. And thank you for everything you do to support our rescue missions, you know, and the rescues across the country and everything you do with the film festivals. It's just wonderful. You know, COVID has been kind of, we've had some really positive things come out of
good.
It. And we are not, Pet Haven is, yes, it's been wonderful. Pet Haven is not a traditional shelter. We started in 1952 and were the first foster-based rescue in Minnesota and the third foster-based rescue in the United States.
Wow, I forgot that.
And it was like, yeah, really amazing. So we actually don't have a physical shelter where animals come and stay. All of our pets are in foster homes, and that's part of our mission where we believe that a pet does better in a home. And as a result, the foster knows the animal better. So we can matchmake. We're matchmakers when it comes to adoption. So our return rate is less than 2%, which in the rescue world is practically unheard of.
Let's stop for a minute and talk about that. Because that's a number that in the sheltering world, which is an industry, a business, a part of America that is very vibrant and constantly evolving and changing as the animal population and the human population changes. Some of us have heard a lot about live release rates, which to those of us who are pet owners sounds like a little harsh, but what it really means is how many animals are not euthanized. And everyone's trying for that fabulous, you know, very high 90s number, meaning the only ones who are put to sleep have terrible emotional issues or they're very sick or ill. But we don't talk about the return rate. And that is fascinating when you say only 2% of our animals come back. It's a number that I've never heard a shelter talk about. I wonder, and you know well, because you, in the days when we all went and congregated, you went to all those animal sheltering conferences as an executive director. What is an average number?
In the sheltering world, if you can keep your return rate 15% or under, you're doing pretty good.
Wow.
Right now, the local shelters here, I'm in communication. You know, the unique thing about Minnesota is we have a lot of rescues and a lot of shelters, and we work together, which is really wonderful.
Nice.
And the shelters are seeing an increase in returns right now, quite a bit. And we are not. We're really lucky. We are keeping our return rate very, very low. And I think that is a testament to really knowing the temperament of the animal, knowing where they're going to succeed and what they're going to be best in, and being able to help that adopter matchmake for themselves and their family.
Okay.
I think it really makes a big difference.
So that it does make a huge difference. And because each of these animals, dog or cat, has lived in someone's home, some incredible St. Francis guardian angel, I think fosters are the most incredible of incredible, because they take in this animal that could have an array of issues, all kinds of issues, physical and emotional, and they work through it and they work with it and then they catalog it so that the person who wants to get them a forever home, as you say, knows exactly what they're getting. But that's an interesting thing that you're saying, that other shelters, traditional brick and mortar shelters or maybe even foster based ones, they're seeing more returns. COVID is still very much a dark cloud over us. And there's been so much written, and I look at it and shake my head like, you know what? This is a non-issue, people. Oh boy, what's going to happen when COVID's over and everyone goes back to work and the animals are depressed? Right. Oh, please. You know what? We have much bigger questions to ask. But with COVID still ongoing and people saying, oh, it's so great, adoption rates are up because everyone's at home and lonely or feels they have more time, you're telling me animals are being returned with COVID still upon us. What do you make of that? Is it that they're living in cramped situations and they're like, oh God, I didn't realize the dog or cat would use up so much of my human space? Is it financial? Because I know a lot of shelters are very lucky in that they have pet food companies and other grants that give money to adopters if they really run out of money to keep the animal in their home. So what do you make of it? If it's not those things, what is it?
You know, I can only speak really to what I've talked with other organizations here locally and then what we experience. But what I'm hearing is people do not expect, even being at home and working from home, a lot of times they did not expect the time commitment. Or they had another dog and they wanted to bring a new dog in and the integration didn't go well. Or there are training things that they need to do that they weren't fully prepared and set up to do, and it's just going to be too much for them. Or behaviorally, emotionally, it wasn't a good fit for the family. And what we do, I think, that's very different is we really work with people. We have pre-adoption and post-adoption support. So prior to adoption, we really work with the family. We do, you know, multiple meet and greets. We make sure that they know exactly what they're getting into with, you know, the cat or the dog that they're going to be bringing into their family. And then we support them after the animal comes into the home, because with rescue, these animals are coming to us with some baggage to begin with. And generally with these moves and these transfers comes an uptick in anxiety and issues can arise. And
sure,
we at Pet Haven, we're there to support people through that. And I think if we can get people through those challenging beginning times, it's easier for them to stick with it and commit. And I think that's, you know, that's one of the things that we help with too. But I think also right now, people are starting to go back to work. Their lives are starting to change. And maybe they're realizing it's just not something that they're going to be able to commit to long term.
Really, it really makes me cross, because right from the beginning when there were, you know, I think everybody wanted some feel good articles or some feel good numbers or some feel good something, not just in the pet world, but in, you know, the outer world, the outer rings. And so the idea is so great. The shelters are emptying because everyone's adopting the pets because now they really understand the value or desire to have more of that pet love. And it really made me mad because I thought this is not. When it's like Christmas, don't give a bunny at Easter and don't give a puppy at Christmas, COVID aside. You know, you have to want it not because there's a Christmas tree or an Easter bunny, or you think, oh, that'd be fun. It, you know, the lifelong commitment part. And I guess shelters, they do their best, a brick and mortar shelter, to really ask people questions. But of course, everyone's going to say what they think you want to hear. No one's going to say, I'm just trying this on like training wheels. And I'm sorry that they've come back for other people and delighted that they have not for you. But what about your intake? How have you been able to take in animals just as you always did pre-COVID?
Yeah, our COVID forced us to look at how we did intake and to make changes and actually be more efficient and more successful.
Nice.
COVID gave us the opportunity to onboard more fosters because people wanted to make a difference. They wanted to help. So our foster base doubled, which was incredible.
Wow.
And it was amazing. And then also what we were able to do with COVID was we looked at the way we processed our adoptions. We looked at the way we onboarded fosters. And we used to do everything in person, which took a lot of time.
Sure.
You know, we would do home visits and maybe we could do two a day, maybe for, you know, for the individual that was doing the home visit.
Yes.
Now we're doing everything virtual. So we can set up 4 home visits a day to onboard fosters. We can set up multiple home visits for different adopters. Yeah. So we have been able to bring in animals in crisis in need much quicker, and we've been able to then adopt them much quicker. So we've been able to increase our flow, which has serviced not only the animals that are in crisis in need, but it's also serviced the people that are in crisis in need, because we have a huge owner surrender program. And that's where we've seen a big uptick, is owners who have already had their pets because of the COVID crisis, because of financial, losing housing, losing jobs, we've offered a safe place for them to you know, have somewhere for their animals to go.
Do you ever say to those people, or have you said to those people, this is a whole nother idea, the bridge. I knew one sanctuary that did this in New Jersey for people that were sent off to war, Iraq, Afghanistan, wherever. We'll keep your dog or cat until you come back. And to be honest, they went under, but that was simply, I'm sure, a management problem. Have you ever said that? You know, we'll hold on until, let's say someone has to take on a second, you know, frontline type of job to get by because the other a wage earner has lost their job or is ill or something, and they're not even going to be home enough to service the animal's needs. Have you ever said that?
Yes, actually, it is part of our strategic plan this year, is we will be launching a temporary foster program to help people in crisis. We will be working directly with social workers who have clients in the system already that need temporary placement for their animal, whether they're going into, you know, hospital for a long-term medical need, or, you know, temporary, you know, for someone maybe who broke their leg or something.
Or even rehab. Or even domestic violence, which is a big reason that people have to give up their pets.
Yes, and also for homelessness, you know, temporary homelessness, and we're going to be able to offer an option for people, because ultimately, you know, what we want is we want forever families. Ultimately,
sure.
We want to keep families together, you know, and that's part of also our support system with adopters, to really counsel them and be there for them when they're having challenges, is because we want this to be, you know, a forever family. So we do whatever we can to support.
It's fabulous.
Which is a little different than some of the larger brick or mortar shelters, because they don't have the capability to do that.
They're spending a huge amount of effort to keep the brick and mortar running as a physical plant, if you will,
yeah,
as opposed to being able to focus on the animals or even the humans whose lives are in this disarray. And they say there aren't things much worse than this problem of domestic violence or homelessness, and then people live in their car. They literally, not in Minnesota, it's a little nippy there, but they live in their car so that they're not going to put their dog or cat on the street. And Pet Haven is truly a haven until things get ironed out. What have you been doing particularly with cats? I know this is a new or an emphasized challenge or goal for you.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, when I came onto the rescue landscape, which was 30 years ago, cats were sort of a bit of an outcast.
Yes.
They didn't get the attention that dogs got. And so there was a big effort in spay and neuter for dogs, and licensing, and making sure that there was not overpopulation. And it has worked wonderfully.
Correct.
In northern states, we don't have dogs having puppies unnecessarily, very rarely.
East Coast too.
But cats, right, but cats have not seen the same luck. And here in Minnesota, cats are really in crisis. And with COVID, what happened was, because of the veterinarians were ordered to stop doing elective surgeries like spay and neuters, because they were saving. Right, because remember, they were saving all the PPEs and ventilators and all of that for human use. And so they shut down the capability of veterinarians to do spay and neuter. And this was in March, right at the peak of the beginning kitten season. We have an organization in Minnesota called MinSnap that canceled. They do very, very inexpensive spay and neuter, and they do for the public. And then they also do spay and neuter for live trapped cats.
Wow.
And
for TNR.
They had to cancel. Yeah. For TNR, correct. And they had to cancel 3,000 spay and neuter surgeries.
And we know how many kittens that means were going to be born.
Yes.
Based on 3,000 cats. And now we're coming up on kitten season again. It's a year later. And it's that horrible exponential, you know, numbers of one cat equals 50 cats, and, you know, in 5 minutes, whatever the numbers are, they're true. They're alarming and true. So you're facing this all over again.
Yeah. So what we did was I identified that cats were going to be, we were going to see an uptick in needs in cats. So we started putting the word out that we needed feline fosters. We increased our feline foster group. We almost tripled our intake on cats, and almost tripled our adoptions in cats.
Wow.
And what we're doing is we are also working to change some of those cultural misconceptions of cats that we always hear, you know, oh, cats don't need us, you know,
they're independent
on your lap because it's warm.
Yeah.
They're independent. And what we're finding, actually, studies are being done that cats possibly bond deeper to their humans than dogs do. There was a study done at UC Davis, and there was a study done at the University of Washington, and they are very telling in describing, re-describing cats as to who they really are,
nice.
Rather than what our cultural misconceptions have promoted them
right,
to be.
Right,
right, yeah. And so we are doing a lot of work around the cats and educating people on why it's a great idea to adopt a cat, and emotional, focusing on not just physical health of the animal, but also emotional and behavioral health. We promote adoption in pairs because
oh,
cats
how lovely.
Really are happier when they have a companion. Yeah. So
especially when they already, know and are comfortable with.
When they're bonded.
Yeah.
Yes. Yep. We adopt out a lot of bonded pairs. We also bring in, which not a lot of organizations are doing, we bring in feline leukemia positive cats.
Good
and
for
we adopt
you.
Them out. And we
Good
bring
for
in,
you.
Yep. And we bring on FIV cats and
nice.
We adopt them out. And we're fully transparent and we work with our adopters so they can understand, you know, what possible challenges or limitations could come up with these types of cats.
But that basically they're not a risk. They're just a management issue. Carrie, we have run out of time, sadly. It's fantastic what you're doing, inspirational to people, obviously, in Minnesota, but beyond as they hear about this. Well done, and keep it up. And when various doors open again, you guys are going to be off to the races, which you already are. Congratulations on all the great work you're doing.
Thank you so much, Tracy. I really, really appreciate talking with you. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the guests as much as I did. Kiss your kitties and hug your pooches, and we will talk again next week. Bye for now.